This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about the communist walls they put up to prevent us from stopping them. We're going to talk about the state of the Democrat Party. Why are people getting swatted on our side? All that and so much more coming up on I'm Right. First of all, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody and all my fellow Irish brethren. I obviously have a bunch of Irish in me. Last name's Kelly. Extra happy St. Paddy's Day to you. Be safe out there tonight. Uber or something, please. Now let's move on because we're about to weave through a couple things, and I swear on my life, this is going to eventually come back to you, to America, to what we're dealing with here. So just stay with me. So I have two sons. You know, James and Luke. I love my boys. And now they're 16 and 14, and they're huge. They're enormous. So it's less of a concern today. But any parent of children will tell you that they worry about child predators. You just do. It's something you naturally worry about. You look at the news, you see, oh my gosh, this guy did what? And you get worried. And so any parent that's worth anything will talk to their children about child predators. And I used to talk to my sons about it all the time. And I remember one time my son, he'd gone to this arcade. And there were parents there, but it was a birthday party. He went to an arcade, like 10 of his buddies. And I talked to him before he left. I said, hey, make sure, he was real young. I think he was 7, 8 years old. I said, you make sure you're always with a friend or close to an adult. Make sure somebody talks to you. You know, basic parent conversation. And he said to me, Dad, I don't understand. What are you talking about? It's an arcade. They're not there. And I said, son, if you were a monster who preys on children, where else would you be? And you could tell the light went on. This is going to come back to American communism. You see, America's communists, and we'll get to El Salvador in a moment, America's communists are oftentimes thought of by us as just some crazy street animal on the corner. They're burning down Foot Locker. They're gluing themselves to the highways. They're at feminist rallies. We look at the freak on TV screaming in someone's face, waving a sign around, and we think, well, that's an American communist. And of course, that is an American communist, but are they doing that much good? The deranged freak that superglued his hand to the Starbucks counter a while ago, you remember that story. Did he actually move the ball in any way for American communism? Not really. They need positions of power. When you think about American communists, you don't think about a judge in a black robe, do you? It doesn't pop into your head. But if you're a communist who hates the United States of America and wants to completely and utterly destroy this country and burn it to the ground, where can you do more good? With your hands super glued to Starbucks or with that judge's robe on? That's where they are. Now, before I come back to that, I want to talk about briefly, just very, very briefly, because that's the only way I'm qualified to talk about this subject, El Salvador. You obviously know about El Salvador, at least you've heard of it. You know where it is, roughly, and you know about their leader, which we'll get to in a moment. But what you may not realize about Bukele, I don't even know if that's how you say his name, I only speak American, but Bukele, what you may not realize is when he first got elected, El Salvador was this horribly murderous place, one of the most dangerous countries on the planet. Just stacks and stacks of dead bodies every single day. And he gets elected, runs kind of on a platform to clean all that stuff up. He gets elected and he immediately starts trying to attack this problem. And he's very successful. In the first year, reduces the murders by 50%, I believe the number was, 50%. But he kept running into a problem, an odd problem, you see. And the problem wasn't the country full of murderers, the country full of gang members, torture and murder everybody. Yeah, granted, that was a problem, but that wasn't the problem he kept slamming into. It wasn't the guys with tattoos on their faces looking super scary. He was running into the judiciary of his country. The judiciary, his own Supreme Court, almost seemed bizarrely committed to stopping him from stopping the murderers. So much so that he had to completely revamp his entire legislature of El Salvador. He had to remake the entire thing. And then after he remade, basically their Congress, I'll just call it Congress, after he remade their Congress, he then had to go through Congress to pretty much replace his Supreme Court. His Supreme Court was so committed to ensuring the rape and pillage of El Salvador that the man who took over El Salvador, intent on stopping it, had to remake the entire judicial body so he could move on and continue to stop these people. Which, of course, I'm sure you saw where this was going, which, of course, brings us to where we are here in the United States of America. We have a lot of judges that must be removed, ignored, arrested. I'm not sure all the avenues we can and should take. And let's pause on that for a moment. Maybe you're sitting there saying, well, arrested's too far. We can't do such a thing. Okay, so let's discuss what just happened. Donald Trump has chosen to use the Alien Enemies Act from 1798. He's chosen to use this act as yet another way, yet another legal way where he can remove the rapists and murderers from the country. We're not even talking basic illegals who should be deported too. We are talking prison gangs, guys with the tattoos on their faces, guys with rap sheets like child rape, torture, murder, aggravated kidnapping. We're talking the most violent human beings on the planet. Trump, the Trump administration, is seeking out every possible avenue to get these guys out of the country, just trying to find a way to get them out. But as he loaded up over 200 of these people, and again, we're not even talking women and children here. We're not talking about your landscaper. We're talking about the most violent criminals on the planet. He loaded them up on a plane and sent them to El Salvador. Quick pause on that. Why El Salvador? Well, Bukele created this incredible, incredible prison down there, CECOT, where he keeps the worst of the worst. He struck a deal with the Trump administration. He's going to keep our terrible people. Anyway, we load over 200 of these savages onto a plane and ship them down to El Salvador, where they will take them. They will keep them locked up into cages. And an American judge, an American communist, committed all the way to burning down the United States of America, issued an order that the plane has to turn around and that the rapists, murderers, and monsters must be brought back to the United States of America so they can live with you. That happened. It didn't happen in some movie. That's not a Netflix drama. That's who sits on the bench in the United States of America. So allow me to once again introduce Bukele to you. Remember when he gave this little speech at CPAC?
We did the unthinkable to cleanse our society. We arrested the terrorists, but we have to remove corrupt judges and corrupt attorneys and prosecutors. These corrupt judges and prosecutors were setting the gang members free. And it wasn't just the gangs. The corrupt system worked in tandem with the so-called international community, the NGOs, and of course the fake news, just like it happens here in the United States. Unelected bureaucrats are trying to instate public policy. Who elected them? They don't have a democratic mandate. Institutions were created to serve the people and not the other way around. When the judicial system was created, it was created out of the necessity to bring justice. But now it seems that survival and control of the judges, of the AGs, among others, are paramount. And the need to bring justice is merely a little more than an afterthought. If the judicial system was created to bring justice, let them bring justice. Let them protect their purpose at all costs. Fight for the original purpose of these institutions and not their mere existence. It's still not too late. It can be done. It is time to erase these new paradigms that have been imposed in the recent years that make no sense. If you just free your minds from those invisible chains, you could do it.
Oh, let's talk about that last part. The chains. Back to the judges. Impeaching them, arresting them. I don't know what we have to do. And these kind of things make people squirm in their chair. They make people uncomfortable, and I understand that. In fact, if you're yelling at the screen or arguing with me that that's dangerous, it's not constitutional, whatever you're yelling at me, I don't have anything to say back to you. I get it. These kinds of things sound ominous, too far, frightening. I'm not comfortable. But the American communist is committed to destroying your country. They fill up your country with rapists and murderers for the same reason the Soviet Union opened up the prisons, because they want you raped and murdered. They want you raped and murdered, one, because they're anti-humans, two, because rape and murder, all this angst, helps the communist. It helps his revolution. American Democrats want you raped and murdered. And American judges in those black robes, they sit there on the bench doing everything they can possibly do to ensure that you will continue to be raped and murdered. So the American communist that's doing the most damage to this country isn't the Black Lives Matter super freak with the new pair of Jordans on he didn't pay for. The American communist that's destroying the United States of America and will end this country, they sit on the bench. They have law degrees, fancy places. They have robes, and they have to be stopped. I don't know exactly what the solution is. I don't know that America has the stomach for whatever that solution is. But these people were put into place to hurt us. They were. The media is committed to it, too. Did you hear what they asked Tom Homan today?
You say to those who claim you're using a 200-year-old law to circumvent due process.
An old law? Not as old as the Constitution. We still pay attention to that, don't we?
But some would say this is...
How many more terrorists do you plan on deporting to El Salvador?
How could you use a law that was 200 years old? Now, does that loser care about the law? Does he care about the age of the law? Do any of those things matter to him? No. What does matter to him is that you continue to be raped and murdered, because he understands full well that is the path to burning down Western civilization. As far as the Trump administration goes, you may love this, you may not, I don't know, but I'm glad they ignored that judge. They're trying to claim they didn't. The plane was already in the air, but they ignored the judge. The Trump administration is going to have to make a decision if they want to truly save the United States of America. If the Supreme Court will not step in and stop these judges, then the Trump administration is either going to have to ignore them and or arrest them. Otherwise, we cannot save the country. If the United States of America, if the American voter is not allowed to implement his will at the ballot box because of communist judges in black robes, then we're already done. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Talk to Josh Hammer about the Houthis we're currently firing missiles at and other things. Before we talk about that, let's talk about getting you a good night's sleep, which may be hard to do when you figure out the judges are trying to keep rapists in your community, but I still sleep like a baby. And whenever I feel like maybe I won't, maybe I've had a little too much caffeine that day, but who knows, the stresses of the day, I just reach for some dream powder, completely drug-free, natural, has things like melatonin in it. It's a cup of hot chocolate. They have several flavors. I personally prefer the cinnamon chocolate. I've always been a cinnamon chocolate freak. I just warm up a little glass of milk, mix in some dream powder, and I sip on a nice, delicious, warm cup of hot chocolate before bed, and I drift off to sleep. But that's not the best part, because there are lots of things that'll get you to sleep. It's when I wake up, I feel like I had natural sleep, because I did. Not that heavy, groggy horribleness. Want to experience that? Try it. Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Well, Apparently, we are decimating some Houthis, and I don't know who these people are. They sound like Star Wars characters. The Red Sea, where is that? I don't know anything about any of this stuff, but I bet you Josh Hammer does. And by the way, I know you love when Josh Hammer joins us, host of America on Trial. It's time to go purchase Israel and Civilization, Josh Hammer's book. Fascinating, fascinating read. Highly recommended. Israel and Civilization. Go pick yourself up a copy. Okay, Josh. The Houthis, they sound weird. Who are they?
Jesse, great to be with you. And let me just emphasize one more time. The book comes out tomorrow, Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation, The Destiny of the West. So order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Jesse, as I say, it was literally the number three book on all of Amazon, which feels totally surreal to even say those words. So let's keep the momentum going, guys. Really would appreciate it. So the Houthis are mentioned in Israel and Civilization a little bit, as the case may be there. The Houthis are basically 21st century pirates. You know, Jesse, America, our first two wars after the Revolutionary War against the British, you know, people typically skip from the Revolutionary War to the War of 1812, basically a rematch against the British there. But there were actually two wars against Muslim pirates there in the intermediary years. And it was called the First Barbary War and the Second Barbary War. Well, the Houthis are basically just the 21st century version of that. They are a radical Islamist there in Yemen. They are one half of the Yemeni civil war that has been tearing that country completely asunder at the seams for better part of a decade and a half now. For the relevant part for present purposes is that they are controlled by Iran. The Houthis take their orders from Iran. This is not a particularly pleasant group. They literally have a motto that is publicly available. You can Google it. It says, "Glory to Allah, death to the Jews, death to Israel, death to America." I mean, it's one of those types of organizations. I mean, they're pretty clear about what they actually believe. And from an American perspective, Jesse, They have been firing completely indiscriminately on American ships, commercial vessels, military vessels for the better part of a year and a half now. And the Red Sea is actually one of the world's most important waterways. Roughly 10-20% at minimum of global trade actually flows through the Red Sea. So freedom of navigation on the high seas is actually one of the most important things that you can literally have in a world. If it's going to be any foreign relations, ships have to be able to travel freely. You can't have modern Islamist Barbary-style pirates. So what Donald Trump is doing here is kind of a quintessential use of Trumpian foreign policy. This is classic Donald Trump realism. He is not the isolationist that people make him out to be. He's obviously not a neoconservative either. He is in the broad space of foreign policy that most Americans are, that I am too, actually. We want to strike the bad dudes. We want to prevent them from indiscriminately firing on our ships, on our sailors, on our Marines there. We also don't want to go in and start sending in the 101st Airborne and start trying to spread democracy. That doesn't work either there. There was a very reasonable middle ground here for foreign policy. I actually have an entire chapter in the book on this, Jesse. It's chapter 7 of Israel and Civilization, making the MAGA America First case for a prudential U.S.-Israel relationship, explaining the Abraham Accords, this wonderful Trump-Netanyahu diplomatic achievement in that broader context there. So all the pieces fit together there, but I personally was very happy to see Donald Trump say this about the Houthis there. The real question, Jesse, obviously, is ultimately what happens with Iran. They are the patrons of the Houthis. They are the ultimate source of so much chaos in the region. But for now, I think these limited strikes in the Houthis are actually a very good idea.
All right, let's do a little rewind, shall we, since you know a bit about the history of all this stuff. Obviously, as you pointed out, they're props to them for their honesty on who they dislike and what their mission set happens to be. But what is their problem with Israel, and what is their problem with us? What's their issue?
Well, their problem with the Jews and the Christians, Jesse, is nothing less than the Sharia supremacist war with Western civilization. I mean, this actually goes really back to my book as well. I mean, if you look back at the history of radical Islam, Jesse, there is a long and at times inglorious, oftentimes in glorious history of various pockets of the Islamic world, fundamentally trying to kill the West, trying to kill Christians, Jews. I mean, you know, go back and look at the siege of Vienna. I mean, in the mid 17th century, when radical fanatical Muslims made it all the way into the heart of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. I mean, that was the furthest they ended up getting in there. Whether it's that, whether it's the Barbary Wars that I mentioned there, unfortunately, largely throughout history, Christians and Jews have oftentimes found themselves in inextricable conflict with radical fanatical Muslims. Not every Muslim, obviously. I'm not going to get accused of being an Islamophobe, but specifically here, Sharia supremacists, radical forces there. And in the book, Jesse, I fundamentally argue that there are three separate hegemonic forces that are seeking to destroy what we call Western civilization. I argue that Western civilization and the Bible are basically one and the same, that Western civilization was actually forged with God's revelation to Moses and the Israelites at Mount Sinai. And all that we take for granted today when it comes to Western ethics and Western values, Western law, politics, our constitution, all that is ultimately downstream of these biblical precepts and these biblical truths there. So the three threats that are trying to destroy us, both Jews and Christians, the two biblical religions alike, are in no particular order: wokeism, Islamism — that's where the Houthis fit in here — and then global neoliberalism. It's basically kind of like John Lennon's Imagine, Jesse. I mean, kind of this liberal dystopia. Let's just eradicate all the borders, the religions there. It's the homogenizing imperative. So Jews and Christians, who are, again, the two biblical religions, we oppose all three of those forces. And the book ultimately calls, Jesse, for a Jewish-Christian ecumenical biblical restoration, to restore the Bible, to make biblical nationalism great again throughout the West, because only a West that understands where it comes from is going to have the spine and the fortitude and the courage to take down these three very dangerous threats: wokeism, Islamism, and global neoliberalism. That's the fundamental argument in the book, Israel and Civilization.
Josh, Joe Biden famously took this group off of the terror list. Now, unsurprisingly, Trump put them right back on where they belong. But I want to go back to the Joe Biden move. That doesn't make any sense. Or if it does make sense, all the answers to why he would do such a thing are positively frightening. Could you maybe explain that to me?
Well, when Joe Biden — and by the way, Jesse, this was literally a day one action, if memory serves. It was literally on January 20th or maybe January 21st, 2021. I mean, this is one of his like first like major policy initiatives. I mean, you know, let's try to like make the Americans, you know, fatten the wallet, the paycheck a little bit. You know, maybe like let's secure the border. No. We're literally going to go in there day one, guns blazing, and take the Houthis off the foreign terrorist organization. I mean, who thinks these things? I mean, it's just totally evil and satanic, frankly. So he removes them from the State Department foreign terrorist organization to a slightly lesser category, specially designated terrorist group or something like that there, which basically means that they are less prone to financial sanctions. All of this, though, Jesse, was ultimately predicated towards the Biden-Harris administration's song and dance routine with the Iranian regime. It was all in service of trying to secure a second nuclear deal after Donald Trump admirably pulled out of Barack Obama's horrible Iran nuclear deal the first time around there. Joe Biden tried to get us back in. That's all that was going on here. And that's frankly all that was going on there throughout Joe Biden's entire presidency. I mean, a lot of his conduct during the Israel-Hamas war was also predicated towards trying to appease Iran. Now, why the Democrats and the modern Democratic Party care so much about appeasing Iran? Interesting question. I'm actually to this day not entirely sure that I have a great answer to that question, other than the fact that Democratic Party foreign policy all too often is genuinely evil in terms of supporting very bad people and opposing good people. But beyond that, I don't have a whole lot to offer. But for one reason or another, the modern Democratic Party is genuinely obsessed with placating and appeasing Iran at any and all costs. That's where the Houthis fit in here there. But, you know, fortunately, Trump, one of his many wonderful moves that he's made over the past 2 months, he brought the Houthis back to the State Department recognized foreign terrorist organization list. They will be sanctioned the crap out of. And now, Jesse, thanks to our commander in chief, they're also being bombed the crap out of as well. I say good news on all fronts.
Yeah, rough time to be a Houthi. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it, brother. All right. Let me talk to you about something. Where do you have your cell phone? Now, let me put it to you this way. My cell phone company, Pure Talk, they hire Americans. Is that something you believe in? It's something, as I've grown older, I've started to believe in more and more and more, and I'm ashamed. I used to not think in that way. But I'm tired. Maybe I'm just a mean old man. I'm tired of getting hold of somebody on customer service and I can't understand what they're saying. I have to repeat myself 19 times. And it chaps me that all these American companies go hire as many foreigners for pennies on the dollar as they can. Pure Talk doesn't do that. When you get a hold of somebody at Pure Talk, you will speak to an American from right here at home. Always pleasant. Isn't that nice too? Speaks English. You'll pay half of what you're paying now. At least that's what I'm paying. Half of what I'm paying now or what I used to pay. Why wouldn't you switch? It's easy. Keep your phone number if you want it. They make it easy. PureTalk.com/JesseTV is where you go to switch. We'll be back. Swatting is a thing. Many people know what it is. Many people do not. And actually, I'm about to explain it, but I hope you never have to experience it firsthand. Essentially, how it works in this country right now is some scumbag murderous communist wants people on the right to die because communists are inherently violent people. We've had this discussion many times before. And so what do? They call local cop shop. They act as if there's a hostage situation or some guy murdered his entire family and now he wants to commit suicide by cop, calls us into the local police department, sheriff's department. Cops, understandably, strap on all the gear, show up at someone's house, and the communist hopes a gunfire is exchanged, and the evil right-winger who believes babies shouldn't have their penises chopped off is dead and gone. Joining me now, two men who know more about this than I do, since they just experienced it, Sean Farish, host of the Ungoverned podcast, and Dustin Grage, columnist at Town Hall. I almost call him Gage almost every single time. Dustin, I'm sorry about that. I suck. Okay, Sean, let's begin with you. It's your story, not mine. What happened?
So it was Thursday evening. I took a very short nap on the couch, which is apparently something I'm not supposed to do anymore because over the weekend I did the same thing and a tornado almost landed on our house in Tennessee. So we said no more naps. But my wife woke me up and said, "Sean, there's cops in the yard with guns." And I had just heard that morning that Nick Sorter's parents had been swatted. Gunther Eagleman had been swatted. So I sat straight up and I said, "All right, we're being swatted." And my wife didn't know what that meant. She thought this was going to be like a J6 situation where I was getting ripped out of the house and the place was going to get turned upside down and everything was going to be a mess. But I'd heard of this before. Marjorie Taylor Greene had it happen to her. Other people have had it happen to them. And so I told her, I said, somebody most likely called in, basically, Jesse, what you just said, some bizarre, vicious, gruesome crime to the house. And we just have to prove basically that that's not what happened. And we're going to very calmly defuse it. So we're not pointing phones. We're not getting up doing anything. Someone told me, go film it. I said, I am not going to go stand in front of a window where some guy's shooting, you know, pointing a gun at me and holding something up at him. We're not going to do that. We're going to just relax and we're going to, you know, let them give the instructions and we'll sort through all of that other stuff afterwards. And that's exactly what we did. But they had guns trained on our home. There were probably at least 10 officers. There were 5 vehicles that we were able to see at the back and the front of the home, altogether 5 vehicles. And it was something that I wouldn't want anybody to go through, because the fact of the matter is, as professional as our sheriff's department was, and they were phenomenal, they were great throughout this entire process. We don't know them. They had never known us. And, one person being a little too jumpy could create a disaster. And we don't want that for anybody who this happens to next. It has to stop.
No doubt. That is, I'm glad you're okay, brother. Dustin, you have your own story. What is it?
Yeah, and, you know, just to piggyback on Sean there, where, hey, Sean, you didn't know your police department. We're just honestly very fortunate where we knew our department before we even got a knock on the door. We got phone calls. Usually we're used to liberal trolls, like, ringing off our phones. So those dozen phone calls, we ignored them all up until we got a voicemail saying, well, no, this is actually law enforcement. Just, like, answer your phone. So we did. But the 911 call that went through for us in this scenario is we had 4 masked men enter our home. They killed my family at this point. And I was by the end of the call, in my bathroom, barricaded, begging for law enforcement to storm my house to save my life. But of course, if I'm the only first person they see and they don't know who I am, I may be shot right there. You know, so that's their intention. They want to have one of us killed in this scenario. And it's really unfortunate, but, you know, just goes to show if literally any of you have a large following out there on X, like, this is the target they're putting on. They're training the guns on us. If you have a large following, reach out to your law enforcement department. Make sure they have your personal cell phone number. Make sure you have a camera system so you know who's actually outside, because who's to say that someone's calling you and it's actually someone who wants to threaten your life and they want you to walk out with your hands up. Now, please cooperate with law enforcement. Do that. But it just the detail of having that camera system and having that little extra bit there to make those situations diffuse. But yeah, these are monsters and they're doing the same thing to all of us. I didn't know Sean before this, but now we know each other fairly well. We're all in a group chat together at this point. So it's like a horrible, horrible family affair at this point. But, you know, we're happy that everyone's been safe to this point. And just frankly, we just got to keep pushing on this stuff so it becomes more publicly aware. We're also thankful that, you know, I mean, not thankful, but it happened to my congressman here in Minnesota, Tom Emmer. So our department also had this experience already for a political figure being targeted. So it helped in that regard as well. But, you know, this is something that's going to be on the rise. And quite frankly, we have to put more levers in place to increase the penalties on this stuff. I'm thankful that Cash Patel's taking this seriously. He's taking our voices seriously. And, you know, hopefully we'll resolve this soon.
Well, life's little blessings. At least you guys are joining forces now. I'd love to see the good people coming together. And obviously, it's easy to see how someone could die. Last time I caught someone on a camera in my front lawn or by it, I came right out my front door with a weapon. And it turned out it was just some guy taking pictures of Christmas lights. But if that's a cop, maybe I'm not here today. Sean, I understand kind of a bizarre twist that I guess I don't fully get why that pizza delivery is part of this whole thing. Before, after, during, that pizzas are delivered to people. One, did this happen to you? Two, what kind of pizza was it? Something low-end like Domino's? Was it quality Little Caesars? What was it?
Well, it was a low-end Domino's and Papa John's. And hey, that's no offense to the folks out here who run those chains. I know you guys are just trying to make a living, but I'm from New York and that's not pizza. So I can say that. I live in Tennessee now, but that's still not pizza, even though I'm down here and I love it down in this state. It's great. I think it's like a way to taunt, kind of say, hey, I know where you live and I can do whatever I want. I've got your address and I'm going to be a nuisance. Listen, you want to send pizza to my house? At least get the order right. I'm not going to receive it anyway, but at least get the order right, okay? But they were sending them, and it was more of a nuisance, kind of to keep you rattled. Like, am I going to get swatted again because they were able to do this? The weird thing was the first four times we got it, it was all after we had already had our encounter with the police. But the first four times they used my phone number on the order. The final time, which was Friday evening, they used the number to our local sheriff's department. So I said, I don't know if taunting them is a great idea. Maybe that's how bold these guys and gals are, this group is, in that they think they're not going to get caught. I don't know. I think they might be playing with fire. But I feel like the whole pizza thing is a way to taunt. A lot of people think maybe the deliveries come first to see if you're home. But for me, every single pizza delivery came after the original encounter with the police, which thankfully went smoothly. Because everybody kept a level head. But in my opinion, it was Domino's, it was Papa John's in our experience, and it was COD, cash on delivery. So it wasn't paid for already. Everyone said, oh, that's going to be easy to track. Well, it wasn't paid for already. These were orders that were placed online and were supposed to be cash on delivery. So supposed to give the money to the driver. Driver takes it back to the store. What we did is we set up a system with our local Domino's and Papa John's where if they receive an order with our address, I now have a system for the location to verify whether or not I placed that order. And if they can't verify it, the order never leaves the store. So we basically cut that off.
Boys, you take care of yourselves out there. All right? Appreciate it. All right. We're going to talk about the state of the Democrat Party, elections, and more next. Well, approval numbers are kind of these weird things, right? what's the state of the country? That's much more important. Is the country getting better for Americans? But let's be honest, I'm a political animal. So are you. We always have our eyes on the next election. And right about now, the Democrat Party appears to have the popularity of cottage cheese that's been left out in the sun for a week. Chris Matthews and the nerds at MSNBC were talking about it. Here was
Chris Matthews. What do you make of these numbers for the Democrats?
Well, you could have seen them the night that Trump addressed the Congress. Mm-hmm. And you watched the Democratic Party. They seemed like they weren't there. They were sort of vacant. They weren't saying anything with their manner. They never questioned the facts, lie after lie after lie, and said nothing. I'll tell you, Carville, James Carville, who said the Democrats should stay silent, may be partially right, but where he's wrong is you have to have a fact checker. There needs to be a war room. Remember in 1992? Yeah. Remember how Bill Clinton won that election because he had a war room? He and George Stephanopoulos were down there in Little Rock, and they were checking every fact, and nobody checks the facts anymore. And the lies are getting through to the American people.
They are.
See, this is the danger we all have in life. We all get old. Look at me, bald, gray now. Remember the war room in 1992? That's 1992, Chris. Those days are long gone. Joining me now, Brianna Lyman, wonderful correspondent with The Federalist, and Elle Purnell, editor at The Federalist. Brianna, remember the war room in 1992? Why can't we go back to those days?
Look, if they want to go back to those days, it actually might help them. Last week, they announced that they were readopting the donkey as their logo instead of that D in the circle. And I said to myself, okay, that's great. Maybe you should adopt the policies that donkey represented, because those policies of the 90s, the 1992 war room, and even the early 2000s are not the policies of the Democratic Party today, right? They've gone so far left. The Democratic Party used to be on the same page with current Republicans about strong borders, right? No illegal immigration. If you come here illegally, there's repercussions. You're going to get sent back. That was Obama. That was Clinton, right? So the party has to revert back to this 1992 war room thought ideology and the donkey thought ideology if they possibly want to win another election.
Elle, it's very obvious to anybody paying attention, which of course you are, that there's this kind of civil war going on between the Pelosis, the Schumers, the older types, and the Jasmine Crockett's, the AOC's. It's just hard for me to see how the older types can win just based on age. Nancy Pelosi's going to be farting dust in a few years, and AOC's like 12.
Well, that's true, but I'm also not even sure that having the younger wing of the party in leadership is actually going to help the Democrats at all. We saw exactly how that played out for them last year in the 2024 presidential election. Joe Biden was the old guy. We're all pretty sure he had dementia, and they booted him from the election and replaced him with his younger woman of color vice president, Kamala Harris. And we were told that she was cool, she was brat, she was full of joy, and voters hated her. So I think the lesson there for Democrats is it doesn't matter who you have selling it. When voters hate what you're selling, you're still not going to win.
Now, that actually is a very interesting point. In fact, I'm going to play this little clip from this Molly Jong Fast, who seems like an insane person, to kind of piggyback on that. Here she was.
Look, this is a policy versus politics problem, right? Biden world, very good on policy, grew the economy, very bad on politics, right? Unable to communicate with voters. We're seeing this sort of hangover from that a little bit. And also, losers are not popular. So they lost, people are mad, Democrats are mad. There's a ton of Monday morning quarterbacking. But the reality is there's good policy here, and it's popular too. Like, think about Project 2025. Bad policy, wildly unpopular policy. So here's the problem. Democrats actually have to do politics now, and that is where we are. But I do think they have much more popular policy. These things that Trump wants to do are very unpopular. The tariffs are unpopular. All of this is unpopular. So if they can't make this, you know, if they can't message on this, I don't know what to tell them.
Brianna, do they have a policy problem or a personality problem? And I realize their policies suck and they're horrific, and I got all that, but they just come off as so scolding and nagging and shrill. And when they're not that, they're weird. Everyone remembers that bizarre fight video last week. Is it a policy problem, or are they just kind of unlikable?
I think the weird person was J.D. Vance. We were reliably informed. And to Elle's point, yeah, that's excellent, right? Yeah. Because they got rid of Joe Biden and swapped in Kamala Harris, who made clear on The View she wouldn't change a thing from what Joe Biden did. So not only was it not a policy issue, it also turned out to be a personality issue. And if you look at polling, it's not only that Democrats are wildly unpopular right now. Donald Trump is actually very popular. He's more popular now than at any point in his first term. So the rhetoric that Molly is spreading and these other folks, that's rhetoric that comes when you're stuck in a bubble and you refuse to step outside of that bubble. But that's not the rhetoric that's being shared on the ground among everyday Americans.
Elle, you did a piece, which I appreciated very much, talking about COVID and how COVID, it was really the draining of the last of the trust so many Americans had, myself included, between themselves and their institutions, namely their government. I don't trust anything anymore. When I see a report that says CDC or FBI or you name it, I just roll my eyes and say, oh, they're probably lying.
Yeah, so when Donald Trump first ran for president in 2016, a lot of people said, oh, Donald Trump is so divisive. I don't like how divisive he is. And then other people pointed out that it wasn't so much Trump being divisive as it was he was just willing to point out divisions that had been building for a long time. And I think COVID did a similar service. Our government was already corrupt, but COVID really showed us what our government was willing to do and what our government really thought of us. And I think that realization was really impactful for people. We saw declining trust in the corporate press after that. We saw a rightward swing among young people who are some of the most impacted by COVID lockdowns. And ultimately, we saw Democrats lose in the 2024 election, which was one of the first opportunities voters had to really deliver a verdict on what they thought of all the years of COVID mania.
Now, that young people thing actually fascinates me as well. Brianna, is that why young people are, I've never saw numbers like the numbers Trump got. Why are young people drifting right? You know, everyone knows that old Winston Churchill saying, if you're under 30 and not a liberal, you have no heart. If you're over 30 and not a conservative, you have no brain. It's just kind of built in that younger you are, the more likely you are to be a complete Maoist. But that's changing. Why?
Yeah, if you look at the polling, you know, 18 to 29-year-old men in particular, who absolutely were a large part of Donald Trump's victory, they've shifted 29 points to the right since 2020. And one of the reasons is it is so jarring. If you read some of the interviews, USA Today did one a few months before the election. Young men were saying, look, I'm independent or I'm Democrat, but I'm going to be voting for Donald Trump because I can't afford to feed my family. When policies are created by Democrats that emasculate a man in particular who feels like he wants to provide for his family and can't do that, right? Or a party that constantly terrorizes and demonizes men, they have to go and find comfort somewhere else. And the Republican Party has offered an opportunity for, in particular, young men to feel welcome, to feel like they have a place and to feel recognized. And that definitely contributed to this massive shift we saw in young people voting for Donald Trump.
Speaking of emasculated men, Elle, Pete Buttigieg is very clearly going to be running for president in 2028. Gavin Newsom's going to be joining him with his gallon of hair gel. It's not that I'm jealous or anything like that. Who's the front runner for 2028 for these people?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. And at this point, it doesn't really matter. I mean, like we were saying earlier, it's not about who the messenger is. It's about the message. And right now, Democrats are choosing the losing side of 80-20 issues. They're pro-war. They're pro-terrorist. They're pro-open borders. They're pro-injecting kids with hormones and cutting off their body parts. They're pro-government bloat. I mean, honestly, the numbers you were talking about a minute ago, I'm honestly surprised that Democrats' approval ratings aren't even lower in the tank.
Yeah. Ladies, thank you. Come back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And, of course, it is St. Patrick's Day. Don't be yelling at me. I've got a little bit of green on it. It's kind of green. Whatever. But you didn't think we were just going to let the entire show go without our proper St. Patrick's Day celebration that we bring you every year. Well, we didn't really bring it to you. It's been around on the internet for a very, very, very long time. And somehow every single year, it still makes me laugh. Without further ado, a local newscast on St. Patty's Day.
Well, just in time for St. Patrick's Day, crowds are coming by the dozens to get an up-close view at what some say is a piece of Irish folklore.
Some people in the Creighton area of Mobile say a leprechaun has taken up residence in their neighborhood. A leprechaun. NBC 15's Brian Johnson has more.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Creighton community. Many of you bring binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. I got to look up in the tree. Who else seen the leprechaun say yeah?
Yeah! Eyewitnesses say the leprechaun only comes out at night. If you shine a light in its direction, it suddenly disappears. This amateur sketch resembles what many of you say the leprechaun looks like. Others find it hard to believe and have come up with their own theories and explanations for the image.
My theory is it's casting a shadow from the other limb.
Could be a crackhead that got hold to the wrong stuff and it told him to get up in a tree and play a leprechaun.
We're going to get down to the bottom of this. Yeah, still on there, guy. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, man.
This guy, helping to direct traffic, says he's prepared for his encounter with the leprechaun. He's suited up from head to toe.
This wards off spells right here. This is a special leprechaun flute, which has been passed down from thousands of years ago from my great-great-grandfather, who was Irish. I just came to help out.
Others just came to get lucky in hopes a pot of gold may be buried under this tree.
I'm going to run a backhoe and uproot that tree. I want to know where the gold is. I want the gold. Give me the gold. I want the gold.
This is Brian Johnson, NBC 15 News.
Don't be afraid, man. Gosh, gets me every time. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.